My name is Philip Goodwin. I'm the chief executive of TreeAid, which is an organization working in the dry lands of Africa to reduce poverty through forestry. Across the Sahel, so we work in Mali, we work in Burkina Faso, Niger, Ghana, Ethiopia, Kenya. The main interlocutors, of course, are the poor communities that we work with, and ultimately they're the people we're responsible to. But we work through a whole range of organizations, national NGOs in the countries where we work, community-based organizations. We also work with national governments, as well as international agencies and donor agencies. So we try and cross as many development partners as possible. Very interested in research as well. So we have a number of partnerships with the research institutions, University of Development Studies in Ghana, for example, University of Ouagadougou, UK universities, American. Again, research and understanding what is going on is so important.
How do you get down to the grassroots level then and participate in conserving what we call the dry lands, but give life to those dry lands?
Well, I think, you know, the starting point has always got to be to understand the communities with whom you work. So we have an operational team in the countries where we work. We spend a lot of time in the communities that we're trying to support, trying to understand their context and their reality. So we are firm believers in a participatory approach, in building up projects and interventions from community needs, and being very careful in working out what those needs might be. And as we all know, it's very easy to slip into your pre-prepared solution. And a key part of our approach is to make sure that development for us is empowerment, ultimately. People are making choices. They have the chance to have choices. Being stuck in poverty, you have no choice very often. So one of the first signs of coming out of poverty is that you have a choice around what you do. And being informed and having genuine information that allows you to make choices is key to what we do. Personally, I mean, I had a lot of experience personally when I was a community development worker in Mali. So I had the privilege of living and working in Timbuktu in Mali. And as a sort of non-African, that taught me a lot. I often think that people who work in development who are not from the countries where they work should really spend time. It taught me that actually the limits of my knowledge. And I think that's something that made a very deep impression on me personally. I'm very conscious. I was asked to speak at the conference this week on forest and food security. I'm very conscious that actually talking about African issues doesn't need a white British person. It really needs African people. So,
actually, what an organization like FAO can bring in, teaming up with an NGO like yours to respond to the real needs and in very concrete terms?
Yeah. So for us, you know, we work in a whole range of areas. We work in enterprise development for non-timber forest products. So we're working with women to develop enterprises around non-timber forest products. So things like baobab fruit, making biscuits, drinks, baobab leaves, selling them to eat, working with Nere to develop that as a product, tamarind, shea butter, and so on. So we'll work with those women to build up what I would call their business literacy, so their understanding of business. And this is fundamental. So you work from the markets, not from the production end. So often when you go somewhere, they'll say, well, we've got lots of, I don't know, baobab or shea. And you'll say, that's wonderful, but who's going to buy it? Where are they going to buy it? And so we work a lot in thinking around, well, what is the market? What will they buy? And then how will you get that to market? How will you process it? How will you deliver it? How will you make a profit? How will you increase your income? So that's a key part of our program. We've been delivering that across Mali and Burkina Faso. We have over 450 enterprises established, and those are covering about 6,000 women. And over the 4 or 5 years we've been delivering that project, household incomes for those women have increased 64% on average. So it's a very significant results and very interesting. So that's a sort of concrete example of what we're doing. We also work on food security issues and nutrition. So we're really trying to raise awareness around the role of tree foods in nutritional security. So what we find is that people have been using tree foods for many years, generations. They know about tree foods. But some of that knowledge is being lost, particularly around how you cook it to maintain nutrient levels, how you store it, how you process it, so you can use it during the hungry months. So we're running a program which is building awareness on that. And we're also building enterprises around those foods so that people can sell those foods for others who want to consume them. And we're also very interested in raising national government awareness around the role of tree foods and really getting them to promote it. We're very interested in it as a source of humanitarian relief as well. At the moment, a lot of food aid is flown in at great expense for feeding programs. But actually, there are a lot of indigenous sources of food, moringa, for example, yeah, in feeding programs. So we're trying to encourage development agencies and governments to think about their own in-country sources of humanitarian relief, really. It's more cost-effective and, you know, more cost-effective for those governments as well. There's also a private sector opportunity there to actually provide those. And it'd be great if it was in Africa rather than coming from outside. So those are some concrete examples of things. Big issue as well is forest governance. We work a lot on that, on conflict resolution and governance arrangements. So we're busy, very busy.
How do you link that to fair trade?
Fair trade for us, I think, is a long process. And this is what we were discussing yesterday. The fair trade is a great opportunity for smallholder farmers. But trying to get subsistence farmers to move from being subsistence farmers to subsistence farmers with some security to emergent smallholders to commercial farmers, it's a long chain. And so what we were discussing yesterday in the meeting is, well, at what point does fair trade become important for those farmers? And I was making the point that, well, often when we talk about international markets, we forget that Africa's a continent. So the minute you're moving from one country to another, that's international trade. So also think about, you know, intra-African trade. Because if you look at mango, who's buying mango? Well, there's a lot of mango being bought across between Mali and Ghana, Burkina Faso and Ghana. Baobab is consumed in some countries but not others. There's a great export opportunity for suppliers in one country to provide for another. So, you know, we're talking about those kind of things. Now, fair trade, yes, step by step. Fair trade is a great opportunity, and it's important in terms of thinking about how trade is conducted with countries outside Africa. But it's important to understand that as a business opportunity because it costs. So at what point can people afford to pay for certification?
Philip, thank you. What lesson do you take out of FAO?
We work with FAO a lot on market analysis and development. So looking what I call business literacy, but has this phrase market analysis and development. I think, you know, what FAO has a great resource in terms of technical resource and knowledge. And where it can work really well, and one of the things we've learned is bringing that body of knowledge in connection with practitioners, you know, at the grassroots is a very powerful tool. And, you know, there are very few organizations that have what I would call convening authority, which means that you have the authority to bring people together. So, for example, if I said TreeAid would like to have a meeting, who's going to come? I don't know, maybe some people that I know personally, but my field of influence is small. Where FAO, what FAO has is the authority to bring the important players and the smaller players, so that across the hierarchies and across the disciplines together to discuss something. And we've seen that this week because we've got private sector, NGO, we've got government. They're all here. We've got forestry, economics, you know, you name it. We've got the disciplines. And people are coming into a room and trying to understand each other. For me, when that happens, you know, this sort of horizontal and vertical integration, then you have transformational change. That's where it happens. So that's what FAO have.